In the midst of a pandemic, when many are struggling to pay for rent, local developers are planning to demolish what has been called the Flanders Home, located at 2124 Northwest Flanders Street within the upcoming year. The house is home to 14 tenants and provides something unique in Portland, an affordable place to rent, including for those living on a fixed income. The Flanders House is an old home painted in blue with cream-colored trimming. Its history goes as far back as the late 1800s, when during a time of serious anti-Semitism, its owner was Nathan Simon, a Jewish lawyer in town. 2 years ago, the home was purchased by developers Elliot Gassner and David Peckham, who planned on demolishing the home and constructing a new five-story 19-unit apartment building to be rented at market rate. So far, it is unclear when Gassner and Peckham will carry out this plan for a new apartment complex. While neither owner has said what the going rate will be for an apartment at the new complex, last November, Oregon Live reported that the median cost for a one-bedroom apartment in Portland was $1,133. In response to the demolition of the home and rebuilding of a new apartment complex, the North Portland Tenants Collective, which formed last March after a group of tenants living in the Kenton neighborhood were told by their landlord rent payments were still expected despite the coronavirus pandemic, have unified to push back against the redevelopment of the Flanders House. On July 27th, during the City of Portland's Historic Landmarks Commission hearing, Portlanders testified via Zoom to the commissioners. One of the owners of the home, Elliot Gassner, explained during the hearing that the plan was to demolish the home for years and that tenants signed leases knowing this. Gassner cited various structural and foundational issues with the home and that renovation would not be enough to fix costly needed repairs. For some residents, as long as a decade, the Flanders House has been a safe haven for those who couldn't afford to live anywhere else in Portland. As will be discussed later in the program, for more than one tenant, this made the difference between being homeless and having an affordable place to rent. My guest today, Rebecca Markley, is a member of the North Portland Tenants Collective and is opposed to the planned redevelopment of the Flanders House. Here's my conversation with Rebecca about the organization's goal, her takeaways from the Historic Landmarks Commission hearing, and the planned demolition of the Flanders House. Rebecca, can you tell me, how did you get involved in the Flanders House?
We got involved with the Flanders House by just some, you know, like basic network connections. Someone had heard about what we were doing as like a smaller like tenant organization that was, you know, focused on direct action. They reached out to us. Her name was Zainab, and she was contacting us on behalf of a neighbor who was in this house that was going through the process to begin redevelopment. And so I think it was like a couple of weeks ago, we met with Zainab and then the tenant who was concerned about what was happening, essentially, because they the house kind of like by fluke almost has remained really, really affordable for the area. And the development that was supposed to, you know, replace it is going to be all like market rate apartments and lots of, I guess there was a concern that there might be a threat of homelessness for some of the tenants who live there because of the house and like the nature of the house, the age of the house, all those kinds of things. They're sort of like losing one of the few instances of real affordable housing that's not subsidized just by like nature of you know the leases that have been honored for years was going to go away. And so with that background, with that tenant perspective, we decided to put together and reach out to the other tenants in the building. We sent letters to them. Nobody got back to us, and that's fine. We did have two people who did live in the house come forward and provide their own testimony. One was in favor of the redevelopment, and one was against the redevelopment. And, that's just kind of, like, how that started. But we really want to be able to, like, help people realize that they do have organizing power, that like they aren't alone in this crisis. As much as like capitalism does a great job of making us all feel alone, as much as property management's companies want to deal with individual problems on an individual basis. Like, these are problems that really do affect all of us. And when we can work together, you know, we were able to pull together a pretty large response to the public testimony or the public hearing on Monday. It was only like the six of us who were really directly involved as part of the organizing team. But, we were able to get Street Roots to notice. We were able to get the Neighborhood Association to take notice. And all together, we're able to really, like, hopefully make a difference and hopefully at least delay the redevelopment until after, you know, the threat of the pandemic has, like, you know, lapsed. Because, like, there are people who are immunocompromised who live in that building, and it's not fair for them to have to leave because the owner suddenly decides right now, today is the day that I decide I want to build my new apartment building. They could just, you know, delay that a few years.
For tenant Aaron Dawson, who shared his experience at the July Historic Landmarks Commission hearing, the Flanders House allowed him to no longer sleep in his car while also working a full-time job. Here's Aaron Dawson's testimony.
My name is Aaron Dawson. I've been living in 2124 Northwest Flanders for just over a year now. When I first moved to Portland in March of 2018, I was actually living out of my car while still working full-time until I moved into the apartment I'm in now. The affordability of the small unit I'm in was pretty essential to me and my stability then, and it still is today. I've actually been able to use the stability here to focus on my career and build for my future since I moved in. But I've been able to live very comfortably here while still saving. Like Joel said at the beginning of the testimonies, I also moved into this unit being told that it would be torn down eventually, so this is not a surprise at all. I feel like we've been given plenty of time to prepare for this. And I'm not against the construction of new housing, and I also totally welcome an increase to housing density in any neighborhood. And as a resident of the building, I'm inclined to agree with Elliot's comments earlier that it just makes more sense to replace the building rather than continue to renovate it. I'm not under the impression that a historical building should be kept around forever. If it's possible to replace it with something that would give more people homes than the original building. That being said, however, I'm also completely aware that as of early 2019, statistics show that 16,000 apartments in the Portland metro area are vacant, which is over four times the number of homeless people in the area, which was a statistic that I belonged in not long ago. I make above minimum wage with a full-time job, but a studio apartment that isn't well over half my monthly income is exceedingly rare in this area. If 2124 Northwest Flanders is going to be destroyed and rebuilt with new units, then it needs to be built to give affordable housing opportunities to the unhoused, and it must also avoid contributing to the 16,000 vacant dwellings that already exist in our community. And if the monthly rent of the new buildings meets market value or is above that, it would still take well over half the income of people at or slightly above minimum wage. It doesn't meet any of those criteria, and it would, like, really add to a growing housing crisis. Earlier, I heard Brian specifically mention wanting to make sure more units were being added than were taken away. But if you're taking away affordable units to make room for units that are inaccessible to the majority of Portlanders, then you're not actually adding any units at all, since there are already thousands of available units for the class of people who could afford at or above market value apartments. I know that renting accessibility and pricing wasn't discussed today, but I think it's really crucial to the planning. Your decision could easily put me back to living in my car, so I hope that's taken very seriously. Thank you.
Unlike what some might expect looking in at this story, not all residents are against the demolition of the home. One resident, Joel, says he has lived at the site the longest, for 12 years, and believes this issue has been blown out of proportion, and that he says he has been given plenty of notice, even before the house was purchased 2 years ago, that the home would eventually be demolished. Here is Joel's testimony.
I've lived here longer than anybody. My name is Joel Drummond. I live at 2124 Northwest Flanders. I've lived here for almost 12 years. I've lived here longer than anyone else in the building. And I wasn't going to speak at first today, but I was shocked that the article in Street Roots and the North Portland Tenant Commission and a couple of neighbors in the neighborhood who have turned this whole thing into this David and Goliath struggle against Elliot Ganser in particular. Nobody came to talk. They placed all this on one person's testimony. They didn't come talk to the other residents in the building. And so they put flyers everywhere, and it's become this big old thing that it shouldn't be. He's an excellent landlord. He's always, his only concern is, are we comfortable? And then he lets us know what's going to happen, you know, well in advance of it happening, that sort of thing. So that was mostly the focus of what I had to say, just the whole morality of the whole thing there, because they didn't do their due diligence. They didn't check and verify. And then also the claims that all this stuff was based on was based off of distorting the facts, because there's only one person in the building who's actually on a fixed income. Everybody else is not. And everybody else has jobs. Some of them are not working, but they're on unemployment. And up till, you know, yesterday, they were getting $600 per week, plus whatever their unemployment was. So they're getting close to $1,000 a week. And that hardly fits the category of a fixed income in terms of, oh my God, they're on a fixed income, we need to do this right here to protect them. And also, he's been here for 10 years, I've been here for 12 years. Everybody has known since we've been here that the whole plan was to take the building down. He's had 10 years to prepare himself to move, and every time I've talked to him, he's like, oh, I don't feel like it, it's too hard to, you know, it's too difficult to even think about that sort of thing. You know, we're all grown-ups, you know. I have diabetes, I have serious health issues, I've been seeing 7 doctors, you know. And so it's just completely unfair, and I think most of the people who have shown up here, you have a huge response, they've shown up because they genuinely care, and they were alarmed. People have been coming up saying, oh my God, are you okay? Can we help you? And it's all based on lies. And that's the unfortunate thing. I don't mind. If you are going to tell something, tell the whole story, tell the whole truth. Tell your thing, you know. Don't have, like, packages coming in 2-3 times a week that you're spending your money on and you're not saving money, you know. And then making it seem like it's the fault of the landowner, you know, who is giving you not only all the time that you've been here, because he's only had this for 2 years. Also, he told us nothing's going to happen this year, and then he'll give us 90 days notice once they know for sure anything is going to happen. Right now, we have 8 months notice. That's plenty of time for any adult to do the right thing. And so I think that most of the people came here with good intentions, and they don't realize what's going on. And so they think they need to support business, especially with all the protesting that's going on. They think they need to do this right here, and it's completely unfounded. And if they had known all these facts, you know, then they would have had a different opinion.
If you are just tuning in, my guest Rebecca Markley, a member of the North Portland Tenants Collective, and I are discussing the organization's fight to keep the Flanders House, an affordable housing option in Northwest Portland, from being demolished in the upcoming year. Can you talk about whether or not you or any of the members of the collective or even tenants that you're aware of have had any conversations with Gessner?
We haven't directly spoken with Gessner. We didn't particularly think that that was like an important thing to do at the time. We were really focused on connecting with the tenants. We were really focused on learning the history of the building, because the public hearing was specifically about, it was in front of the Historic Landmarks Commission. And so we wanted to make sure that we were providing testimony that was relevant to the powers of the Historic Landmarks Commission. And so that's kind of what we were focused on, because we'd only really heard about the Flanders House disaster only a few weeks beforehand. So that's what we were really focused on. But we do plan to reach out to Elliot. I know during the testimony or during the hearing, he was a little bit upset that we hadn't reached out to him yet. But we really wanted to focus on making sure we had a good case for the Historic Landmarks Commission, because like that was the deadline. And now that that has been, I guess, the Historic Landmarks Commission rejected the development plans, and they asked Enmerich Architects and Gessner to come back with new with a new take on some issues that they felt were important. So now we have a little bit more time, and we're going to go back and check in with Elliot.
So I believe the meeting was July 27th. So for that meeting, that recent historic landmark meeting, was the point of that to call for preservation of the Flanders House? What was the intent?
Our intent was to really delay the approval of the house or of the redevelopment, based off of some kind of unfortunate situations. The house has not been, the house does not have as many like historical home protections as some of the other homes in the area. So we're like, it might have to go in front of city council, you know, all it has a few more like layers of red tape around it. This one, just because of by nature being in the historic alphabet district, it does need to go in front of the Historic Landmarks Commission. And we were just trying to delay that because that's really the only tactic that we have right now, as far as preventing this from happening. And that is because in the 80s, the house was determined to be non-contributing, like a historic, like non-contributing house, not contributing to, I think, it's like architectural integrity. And I know we've spoken with Commissioner Derek Spears about what the commission is trying to do as far as re-examine that designation of architectural integrity and really kind of like pull back and be a more like historical cultural significance and not just architectural, because they realize that that specific architectural designation is packed with a lot of privilege and doesn't afford some spaces like the Flanders House, for example, at being made significant because, you know, it has experienced some additions that are not completely, accurate to when the architectural style where the house or when the house was built.
And can you talk about, from the organization's, your organization's standpoint, has really emphasized that even before the pandemic, and many Portlanders are aware of this, there is a huge housing crisis, especially for low-income renters. Can you talk about how that particularly pertains to this house and even more so during the pandemic in terms of there being a shortage and how, if eviction were to occur, what that means for various renters and their different experiences and needs?
Yeah, well, the owner of the building pointed out, the house is not like, it's privately owned, so it's not public. It doesn't get those same sort of subsidies required or afforded, like entitled to those buildings. And so it's kind of, like I said earlier, by fluke almost, that this house has been able to remain so affordable. And I think that's because it's been kind of like on the chopping block for many years. The owner pointed out that there are tons and tons of repairs that need to happen. As an owner, I think it's absurd that he's bemoaning these repairs that he's, you know, put off for 2 years. And then the owner before him as well. I think that just kind of shows that developers have had their eyes on this, this lot of land for many years now. And kind of to speak to like the housing crisis, there are so many buildings in Portland that have empty units. And it's because, and they're just sitting empty because, you know, the market rate going rate for apartments is so much higher than what lots of people can afford as far as, wages. And as wages have like has stagnated historically over the past, 10, 20 years, the prices of units in Portland have skyrocketed, and not keeping up with that, or completely, yeah, skyrocketed, whereas wages have remained stagnant. And so there are tons and tons of homes that are, you know, or apartments that are, you know, quote unquote market rate, but that market rate is so inaccessible to people that they, you know, have to sleep on the streets instead of just like have access to apartments that, you know, they could. And it's interesting that both the developer and many other people who I guess care about housing issues are like, eventually, you know, the market is going to catch up with all of the developers and they are, they're going to have to drop their rates. But the fact of the matter is that that's not happening fast enough. Like, the market to correct itself is sort of like still forcing tons and tons of people to move back in with their parents, you know, break their leases and be on the hook for thousands of dollars for their lease break fees.
It also assumes people have jobs, which many Americans do not right now.
Exactly, exactly. And it's so hard to even get approval for, you know, an apartment these days in Portland. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a quote-unquote good employment history, you're currently unemployed, like, what are the chances of you're even going to be allowed to even, like, rent in an apartment that you might be able to afford? So it's, I don't know, it's really dire. And I feel like, just like, again, waiting for the market to correct, so many people are losing out and so many people are going to suffer because developers decide that right now, during a pandemic, is when we really need to be pushing forward my redevelopment plans.
After all those for and against the planned redevelopment of the housing site testified, one of the owners, Elliot Gassner, responded that many of the testimony provided against the new building was organized by the North Portland Tenants Collective, and that since the group and those who testified did not reach out and speak with Gassner, many statements were made out of ignorance.
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner Minor. I do have a bit of a prepared statement that I might make. And first of all, I just wanted to note that almost all the testifiers today were organized by the North Portland Tenants Collective. They never reached out to us as the ownership. They never requested to verify any information. So, I just, you know, they're making a lot of claims without really understanding the nature of the situation. So, I just wanted to, I'll proceed through my statement as quick as I can. The building in question has been an example of natural affordable housing for decades. We, again, only purchased the property 2 years ago. It's not subsidized in any way. Rents are not stabilized. We have maintained the rents for the long-term residents as they were when we purchased the property, so we have chosen to not raise any of the rents. But since purchasing the property, it's become apparent that it has continued to be affordable as it is because previous owners failed to make necessary capital improvements for decades. So because of this, the current building is near the end of its useful life, and it cannot continue to be operated for an indefinite period of time. It will shortly require all the major renovations that have been deferred for all those years, which would necessitate vacating the building. So regardless of how we proceed, it would be required to vacate the building in order to bring it up. So the roof segments, the foundation, all of the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems will need to be replaced shortly. The non-original siding contains asbestos, which also requires remediation. So our team did, as soon as we bought the property, did carefully evaluate and renovating the current structure to see if it would be a viable option to operate in the future. Unfortunately, it has such a major deconstruction and then reconstruction effort, which would be very expensive and the costs of which would be so significant that they could not realistically be supported by a building of that size and the potential rents that you would generate from that. So maintaining the status quo, I'm very sorry to say, is of a naturally affordable SRO is simply not an option. So any owner would need to make necessary improvements to the current building, and could not continue to operate it as it currently is. So, and I think as a few of my tenants indicated, we're extremely conscientious of the disruption to the residents' lives that redeveloping the building would cause. You know, unfortunately, we, like any other subsidized owner, don't have a choice. We have to proceed because the current building is not sustainable in the way it's currently operated. So we have done everything we can to make this a good, and well, as good as process as it can be for our tenants. We've communicated well in advance. They've known about the potential redevelopment since before our DAR hearing in September 2019. And we're trying to provide as much transparency as we can. And I will note, of the 14 apartments in the building, only four are occupied by residents who've lived in the building for more than 3 years. Under our management, as I said, none of the rents have increased. When the redevelopment does proceed, those tenants would receive rental relocation assistance payments. And I plan personally, on helping them find new homes. So I've already talked about that. I will dedicate as much time as need be to find them new places to live.
Through an email exchange with a tenant who has lived at the property for 10 years now and who wishes to remain anonymous, says the demolition of where he currently lives will have devastating impacts on his housing situation and overall health. He writes, quote, "It's sad that such a historic building is going to be demolished in the name of progress. Portland doesn't need more overpriced luxury apartments, especially when so many apartments sit empty. More than the number of homeless people on the street, I am given to understand. The loss of the Flanders House will be a loss of character in the Alphabet District, particularly because it is that rare affordable housing option in this part of the city. We need to maintain, not eliminate, affordable housing options. Two affordable housing options exist in the city as it is. Is there really any question why we have such a devastatingly large, unhoused community of people? If I'm being honest here, in the starkest of terms, gentrification is an evil force of greed and classism. There is no humanity in kicking people out of their homes for sake of the profit motive. As it stands, the way things are done is profit over people." End quote. I went on to ask about the effect this will have on the tenant's future housing and health, and here's what they wrote. Quote, "I can only tell my own story. I am living on a fixed Social Security disability income of $800 a month. That's about $9,600 a year. I have been able to remain housed and stabilize my health due to affordable rent, which has remained at a manageable level for me for 10 years now. I am facing the possibility of homelessness. I have gotten on every low-income, affordable, and subsidized housing waitlist I could find, and I continue to seek out affordable housing options. But as anyone who has ever dealt with affordable housing knows, it's all about the waitlist. Waitlists move slowly, and it can take from 5 to 10 to 20 years to get into a building. I've been on Home Forward Section 8 waitlist for 6 years now, and I've got many more years to wait until a unit opens up for me. I'm afraid that availability isn't going to come quickly enough. Why does anyone think we have a homelessness crisis? It's because there's not enough subsidized housing for people when they need it. In the immediate term, upon being evicted, I will have nowhere to go that I can see, and I am currently looking for a cheap motel that offers monthly rates and long-term stays that I can afford. Health-wise, I live with a long list of conditions. The major one to note are HIV and AIDS, insulin-dependent diabetes, PTSD, and anxiety disorder. The housing upheaval that I'm facing could potentially seriously throw me off balance. To begin with, I need a refrigerator to store my insulin, and I take 15 prescription medications. Only with stable housing have I been able to keep a handle on my medication management and to remain stable overall. Waitlists are a long-term waiting game, and I hope to find a motel that I can stay in, as I mentioned. Finding a roommate situation or a room to rent from a homeowner is next to impossible online anymore. I'm looking, but I'm having no luck with roommate websites, and Craigslist appears to be mostly scammers at this point. I miss the good old days when you could put a flyer on a bulletin board in a coffee shop and make a great roommate connection with relative ease. And if you do manage to make communication with someone online, they will decide to ignore you, disregard you, devalue you, or quickly determine that you would not be able to be a good fit for their household when they hear you say the term fixed income. People have a lot of prejudice against the disabled who lived on Social Security. No one wants to live with a 50-year-old gay dude on disability with chronic medical and mental health issues." This is Claire Rosciato with KBOO News in Depth.